It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and this week we are on our death. We're getting a lot done. Our death albums continuance. It's the fifth studio album. Individual Thought Patterns came out June 22nd, 1993. I listened to the 2011 remaster because I can and I want to. And it was his anniversary of his death the other day, was it not, Chuck?
Yesterday, yeah. Purely by coincidence as well.
Yeah, that just popped up all over my feed, and there was lots of quotes from here, there and everywhere talking about it. It was just like, cool. We seem to be having a habit of getting people doing albums when people have kind of died quite close to the fucking show.
We, especially metal musicians are dropping like flies at the moment. But funny enough, sorry, bit of copy there. It just so happens, yeah, purely coincidence, it was the anniversary of Chuck's death yesterday. There was a bit of Vince flying around. Not as much as you'd think, because Eric, who was Chuck's best friend and manager, he put out a thing on Death's page, because you've noticed there was nothing on the official Death page. Because they don't acknowledge the anniversary of his death. He put out a post once, just went, that was a fucking, the worst day for many reasons. It's just not a day that they want to relive. So what they instead do is they continue to celebrate his birthday. So any, so he just
positivity,
says, so,
I suppose.
Yeah, respectfully and politely, we just say any photos, tributes, anything you want to post, just save it for his birthday. Don't do that day. But obviously,
no one fucking listens.
No one listens. Yeah. So, but I saw this this morning actually, and I shared it because I wanted to read this out because I thought it was very touching. And one thing as well, a lot of things that people, you know, that Chuck could have been a difficult person to work with, and he always went for different lineups, and he's a bit of a control freak and the rest of it. And it's not something we've denied or skimmed over. They don't even do it in the documentary either. But I thought it was nice to get the other side. And no, there's a reason people still talk about him. It's because he was a nice guy. And he did have, you know, people that are dear friends with him. And to this day, still speak highly of him as well. So I just thought this was nice to read out. And also, it kind of clears up the whole possessed and death thing, because there's a bit of an argument. Death, Chuck's just nicked what possessed were doing, and da 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 da, and possessed and death were in competition with each other, and la la la. Well, this is actually by Jeff Becerra from Possessed, so this is from the horse's mouth. And it was Sonny, it's quick, I'll read it quickly. Dear Chuck, I've been asked to write a letter to you describing why you are missed. And of course, the first thing that comes to mind is that I miss you because we were friends. Or we are friends. I miss hanging out at Crystal's house and sharing riffs, watching you play guitar, and just basically talking everything death metal. You were one of the first people to really understand what Possessed were doing and what true death metal was all about. I miss that feeling like nobody understood death metal like we did, and that feeling that we were doing something revolutionary. You were an amazing talent and a good friend. Even though we were all about death in thingies and wrote about the darkness in truth, you were a truly nice guy and really cool to hang out with. I know you, if you were still alive, we would be laughing at all those magazines and people that act that we were in some sort of competition. But nothing could be further from the truth. I miss our long talks and jams and all the questions you asked and how you looked up to me. At the same time, you were so unique and individual in your craft. I miss those times when you would be so happy to show me your new music and how proud you were to be my friend and how proud I was and am of your talent and accomplishments. You were an amazing friend, talent, musician and fun to hang out with. I miss partying out with you and how you always wanted to show me your latest riff. I wish you were still around so we could have collaborated and made some killer sick shit. Chuck, you were such an monumental contribution to death metal and metal in general, and the world is a better place because of you. I miss you, my friend. I will meet you in the left-hand corner of heaven. your friend always, Jeff Becerra from Possessed. So that fucking clears that up.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
So everyone and their little tin foil hats can be squished up and killed off. That pretty much puts everyone to fucking sleep in that respect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's see. This is apparently Metal Magazine's topped in the 11th greatest extreme metal album of all time or some shit. And yeah, the Relapse Records one that I listened to, the remaster, come out in October 2011. And yeah, so when did you first hear this album? I tend to try and listen to them in order for the show. And I try and get like a snapshot and I'll type the notes just before we record. Normally, because I'll give it a few days to just get my head around it. But so I've heard it over the past week or so. So and because I've got all of the fucking albums on Spotify, it just randomly a death track will pop up and I'll know it's them straight away. Obviously, how could you not? So I've probably heard a couple of them on a number of times on just random Spotify shit, but so that's when I heard it.
It's that certain tone that Chuck has on the guitar as well, isn't it? That he always opens with like a... You could just tell when he puts in a solo or a melody, he has that tone that no one else has. And even
it's very video game sounding at times.
Yeah, when we move on as well and do the Controlled Denied album, that opening lick of guitar... Because it wasn't Death, it was a whole new band. Chuck's not singing on it either. He hires a vocalist. And I remember getting that CD and opening up and, all the songs are written by Chuck Schuldiner. It was still him writing it.
Mm.
And I remember putting it on and went the opening notes of the guitar. I was like, fucking hell, it's still him, you know? But, I first heard Individual Thought Patterns put in... Well, when I got into Death, as I've explained in the last couple of episodes, I would just pick them up as and when I could get them at the mercy of what the record shop had in stock at the time. So it took me a year or two to sort of accumulate everything. And then when the reissues came out, I bit by bit, one at a time, just replaced the ones I originally bought with the new all singing, all dancing editions. I believe that this was the better one, one of the better of the reissues, actually, because it had it funnily enough had a Possessed cover at the end, The Exorcist, which was fucking pointless because there's no vocals on it, it's just an instrumental, which I...
So we'll ignore that.
We'll ignore that, yeah. Philosophers did the closer. A bit like with Human, that the cover of God of Thunder, that wasn't on the original CD, that was on the reissue.
It's just a little extra to get people to shell out.
But the
I understand
Individual Thought Patterns came with a second CD of a full live show at a festival.
And it's in Germany, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's a really good. That's pretty cool. So
let's get on with the actual album itself.
Dive in,
Overactive Imagination, right away, kicking your head in. Love the riffs, the bass is all over the place. Great title opener. The slowdown bit is on point. And it's got like the thrashy riffs, like old school, like Creator. Big scenic solo. And I'm listening to the remaster and it sounds fucking pretty good as well, to be completely honest. I'm well up for it. Great little opener, top track to start with for me. Overactive Imagination, I like it.
Yeah, I love this is a brilliant opening track to an album. I mean, there's no introduction, no fancy little fluffy bit at the beginning, straight in. Even Human had like a bit of a drumming sort of build up. This is not, you know.
No fucking about at all.
Bit of groove in there as well.
Yeah. I might upset drummers on this episode. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, okay. But no,
I'm not going to say it now. But I'll explain that comment later on because it's quite important for me to get this.
But no, it's just a 3.5 minute perfect little tone setter, as I refer to them. It sets the tone. You know what's coming up, and as this album goes on, actually There is no fat on this album going forward. There isn't a single song that's above the 5 minute line.
Yeah, they're all short.
As progressive and proggy and spacey and weird as human could get. They've not abandoned any of it on this. This is still just as technical and weird as Death ever got, but it's very compact. Mm. Very, and I think Gene Hoglan had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But then again, Dark Angel's last album before they split up, they had like 10 plus minute songs, so maybe not as much.
No, all it's a lot more compact, the album, than the previous one, and it is a lot less. Let's go off on one for a bit for a long time. They're more compact, and some of the songs, I'd say, benefit from that.
I actually think this is their most accessible. This is kind of like the hit.
Bite-sized chunks.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's, you know, maybe a better album to give someone to get into Death. You know?
Yeah, because it would, you'd know what to expect, but lots more of it on the previous albums. I say that's fair. Any more for the first track?
No.
In Human Form, the pummeling continues. Ready to attack. Love the sound on the little cheeky solo. It's angry and intense. The bass, that bass player, man, fucking hell. I love this, man.
Stick Cheerio.
Mr. Bungle change-ups in death metal is just amazing. At 2 minutes, the change up is crushing. The bass commands this song at times. It just commands it. And the drums are on point, but Gene hasn't got as much flair as the previous drummer. He's more binary, and there's less feeling to it. Sorry if you love Gene Hoglan, and I know I'll probably go to drummer hell for saying that, but there's less soul in it, and I'm not having it. It's on point, but they've lost the soul a little bit, and they've lost the flair from the last album. The end thrashy riff is fucking... It's great. It's another great track. For me, the second track's a big improvement on the first as well, and that was pretty fucking good.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting take. I mean, I know Gene Hoglan is the god of drumming, but... Sean Reinhardt definitely set the standard on Human. Mm. And just because, you know, and the more I think of it, actually, like as famous as Gene Hoglan is now, if you said to me, like, what's his five best albums, I don't think, like, his five drum performances rather than, I don't think individual thought patterns would come up. Like, people would more likely go with Symbolic.
It just feels like punching holes in paper. It's just a necessity because you need to put it in a... It's like he's filing it. He's filing his performance.
Yeah. But then some people argue that Gene was playing lead drums on some songs. So, yeah, I don't know. It depends, he's far from a slouch, but I don't think that's what you're saying. But.
No, it's less Bill Ward... less flair, less jazz to his style.
Yeah.
It's more of a drum needs to go here, a bass goes here, a tom needs to go here, and it goes there, and it goes there good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it doesn't have that natural flair going on. And I know he's a fucking great drummer.
It's
silly not to say that he is. It's just different, and you can tell that straight away with the first song, even.
I think as well, when this... just to set up as well, set the stage a bit, the Human lineup dissolved. Paul Mastaffin, I can't remember his surname, and Sean Reinhardt, they were originally in Cynic anyway, because Chuck liked the Cynic demos, he hired them off the bat to do his next album.
Mm.
So off the back of that, I think Cynic got signed, because the first Cynic album, Focus, was released the same year as this album, Individual Thought Pattern. So they moved on to concentrate on Cynic. So Steve Duro stayed in the band, but then at this point, Dark Angel had split up and Gene Hoglan had joined. But Death and Dark Angel had toured together and it wasn't a good experience. Apparently they didn't get on.
Mm.
So apparently, you know, Gene obviously was looking for work, Death needed a drummer, and he kind of was a bit apprehensive, but apparently he spoke to Chuck and said, look, that what went on was nothing to do with, like, you and me individually. So let's just basically start again. And apparently they got on really well. The main bulk of this album was written by Gene and Chuck on their own, just jamming together, just jamming riffs.
Nice.
Steve DiGirio is just a monster on bass. He probably just fucking...
I imagine he'd just turn up and just go, oh, you're playing that? I'll play this then. Mm. Not like, show me what to play. He'll just come in and go, I'm playing this then.
Yeah. And
he's got that presence.
He's not on any more Death albums going forward, but he is on the Control Denied album. And I think you'll find it's either Symbolic or Sound of Perseverance. Might be both, in fact. He's not on either of those albums, but on the special edition, he is on the demos.
Mm.
So he was still in and out. But I think he was just as much a journeyman as Gene was on drums. He kind of went where he was hired. So I think he just...
His style of bass seems to lend itself towards the previous drummer as well, because the drummer was doing the little jazzy fills and stuff and the bits where you're just going, fuck me.
Well,
it kind of lends it to that, I think.
One thing Gene and Steve do have in common, I mean, if you look on Metal Archives and look at both of their profiles, both of them have been on so many fucking albums, it's unreal.
Yeah.
And they kind of, a lot of people do say Sadus, which was his original band, but that was one thing that actually held that band back, and they should have been bigger, was because Steve, as soon as they put an album out, Steve would be on tour with Death or on tour with them or this person or that, but you know. So that,
you got to make your money though, haven't you? What are you going to do?
Yeah, but he's fantastic now. And both of them are now in Testament. So I
just think tells you, though, that
Testament have got the best of both worlds at the moment. They've got the best fucking rhythm section they've ever had and the two classic guitarists. So that's why Death are on form at the moment. But
yeah, and I would definitely say with Testament... it's probably the best time to go out and see them as a unit. And there isn't any Slayer anymore, so fucking make the most of what you have now would be my thing with them. See them for, not so much for the newer music, because it was there and then it was gone as quick as it turned up, but for the live show, I think, with Testament. So it's definitely one for to keep a lookout for. That's if they ever come up north, which is fucking probably not, unless they're with someone else. Unless they do like a fucking theatre thing in Manchester, probably
they're,
that.
They're in a tour next year, aren't they, with Exodus and Death Angel? And I don't remember them saying they're going to do a... Not kind of come to the UK and do some dates, going to do a proper tour. So, look out...
Well, that works.
Look out around... I think it's March or April. Look out into it. But yes, it's definitely Testament, Exodus and Death Angel. Sure of it.
If they bring that here, that's definitely...
That's coming here. I'm going to the London show. So
nice.
Human form. I've not even.
Yeah, go on.
It's a riff salad, riff it and melody salad, and it's just fantastic. Everything is so interwoven and fucking atmospheric. Beautiful riffs. Fucking, I don't know where to start or where to finish, to be honest. Again, it's just so much going on in such a short song. It's crazy. Yeah.
There is a hell of a lot going on. The bass just takes it by the reins at times, though. It's just a mouth, just like, whoa.
When I was listening to this, actually, I did think Gully's going to have a lot to say about the bass on.
Yeah, it just takes control. It's kind of like the guitarists have said, look at our amazing riffs, and he's just got amazing riffs. Fuck off. Do you know what I mean? Which is really good. Jealousy, spinning and twirling riff at the beginning. The riff kind of reminds me, you know, if you've ever drank too much, and I've been doing a lot of that when I go out. And with that song that you hear when you get back from the club and someone puts it on and you just twatted, it's like... That's what the beginning riff sounds like at this. And then you got the bass and the little bass slide. This is how you play riffs, man. If you can fit a slidey bass into this type of music, then you go... Yeah. This is definitely the musician's death metal album. It's bass riff at 115, yes. Imagine being in a band that's compared to death, and then this album comes out. I'd just be like, nah, I'm quitting. The solos, the Metallica-esque riffs on the solo is good. It's like an... I get visions of a manga fight scene where there's just one guy and then there's just a load of blood and guts and fucking dead shit everywhere because he's just unleashed his fist of fucking something or other. and you can just see him ripping people apart and shit. That's what this song kind of gives to me, and yeah, it's my favourite song so far on the album. Great track.
That's the thing as well. I think with this rhythm section that's on this album, you wouldn't. I'm not sure this song would have been pulled off quite as well. And there's a lot of this going on in this album as well. That just that bit at the beginning didn't, and it's that drum pattern.
Yeah.
You know, and especially on the next song as well, which we'll get to in a second. But the way they're just intertwined together, and they just kind of, rather than drive the song, it kind of helps hover the song, if that makes sense. It just kind of carries the riff and lifts them up to you.
Mm.
And yeah, that, you know, that with that and, you know, some of the stuff Gene's doing is really intricate on this.
It's intricate. I'd agree. It is intricate, but it is overly precise.
Yeah, okay. I know what you mean by that. Yeah.
Yeah, there isn't a little off-canter beat going on because you can do them, but it's not on show here. It's just ones and zeros for me at times. And that's the difference where the previous album was a little bit, whoa, I didn't expect that little off-beat beat. And there isn't any of that. And that can make the difference for me. So, Trapped in the Corner, Moody Into Roof. Moody Into Roof. Reminds me of Street Hawk. 1980s or something in a fight game. The snare sound is pissing me off on this. I don't like the sounds of the snare. It's too grating. The riff at 123 is great. And it's been technical excellence in fucking riff writing so far. The off-canter solo and 2 minutes works for me. And like, it just reminds me of something from a fucking Top Gun or something. I'm on a bike with no helmet on, riding by a big beach when the sun goes down, and then it invokes a bit of gaming and Top Gun shit. And Trapped in a Corner, another great track. And yeah, there's a lot of 80s gaming films and riffs and just general things. You can see that he was definitely a big into stuff like that when he was writing. And yeah, cool stuff. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is one of my favourite Death songs altogether. I love that introduction. It gives me the feeling that you're floating, you know, the goosebumps, hairs on the back of your neck, however you want to describe it. Going over a hill in a car, your stomach sinks. The way the song builds up at the beginning with that brilliant little riff, that signature chuck, we're building up to the bam, with just the guitars just being licked underneath it. It just sounds so fucking.
You've got to be wearing the denim jacket amazing. on your bike.
And
denim jacket on bike.
Yeah, it just continues to build up, and when it builds up to that midsection, that and then kicks in later on to that fucking climax at the end. Again, beautiful intertwined solos. Andy LaRocque that's what I was saying earlier, they recorded the album pretty much as a three-piece.
Mm.
And Andy LaRocque from King Diamond came in for one day in the studio and just did a load of solos over the top.
That works.
And I think for the tour, they hired Greg, I can't remember his surname, he was in Forbidden. And I think also, he was in Ice Earth and he was in Deerside. He's dead now. Ralph Santola as well. Those two guitarists did the tour.
Yeah.
But Trapped in a Corner, it became a staple in their live show as well, for good reason.
And it's a top track.
Fantastic song, yeah.
Yeah, not nothing is everything. They're not letting up with this opening riff. They're keeping it going. The wanderings and meanderings of the bass at times is on point. It seems well rehearsed, but at the same time, the bass has got some spontaneity to it. And then when it kicks into the random speed up, it's different, but it fits. We're nothing is everything. This is proper brutal. It's a top track. I prefer the previous ones, but the bar is set so high. Imagine if you're just sitting there in the room with your mates and he just goes, I've got this this riff, and then just comes out. You'd just be like, what the fuck? You just beggars belief how even like one of the lesser tracks for me on the album have just got so many cool fucking riffs. Like, so it's not the worst track by any means. It's just the other tracks are a little bit better for me.
It's one of my favourites, actually. I love the way it kicks in, balls to the wall, and then just kind of pauses. It's just... What's so great about Death later on is that it's so much classic. Everyone goes on about how progressive they went, but they didn't go all widdly-widdly for the sake of it like fucking Gorguts did. He actually intertwines like a lot of just classically written music into it. Like, there's so many riffs in these later albums that could easily have been on Judas Priest or Iron Maiden.
Yeah, there's everything in it. It's
classically classic, structured.
Yeah, there's everything from Motley Crue to jazz riffs. There's classical music overtones to it at times. There is a mashup of so many genres put into one package.
Yeah,
and there are so many layers to it.
And when it builds up to that fucking beautiful solo at the end, or is it a solo or a melody? I don't know how you want to put that. It builds to the... The way that's played, it's just fucking... Again, just takes my breath away every time I hear it. I never get sick of it. It hits me just as hard every time. And this is just a fucking... This is why I love Death. It's the little moments like that. When everyone else was concentrating on being brutal and all the rest of it, it was Death that went, hold on a minute, what else can we do here?
Anything for me that invokes a bit of imagination is good to have with music. And Death's music always seems to do that. And it's something that I like, music that is layered and... You can hear different things each time you listen to the tracks as well.
Oh yeah, the whole catalogue is a gift that keeps on giving. You can re-examine it every time. Just go from front to the back, work your way through, and you discover something new every single time.
Yeah, definitely. So we've done Nothing Is Everything, haven't
yes,
we? So
yes.
Mentally Blind, nice drum intro. Drums are focused and have less flair. We've established that. I do love the speed up. The slowdown with a bit of airy shit going on. Because I listened to the remaster, I wish Chuck's voice was a touch louder in the mix. The double kick is on point, though. It's fucking pummeling. When we were talking about like Judas Priest and stuff like that, the riff at 1 minute 50 sounds like Motley Crue. And then Chuck growls and fixes it. And there's so much... different contrasting styles of play in most of the songs on the album. And this is definitely one of them bands. If you were on the bill with Death at the time and you were going on after them, you probably wouldn't want to go on after them. You'd have to just go before them, because if they can play like this live, then you're fucked, because you can't beat that. Very video game sounds and riffs, still very evident as well. So there's the cheesy cock rock riffs at 1 minute 50, and there's the video game riffs as well. It's there's a lot going on, and it's great. It's a great track. I didn't mind it at all.
Again, when it pauses and you've got those fucking fantastic solos, that's the thing that really, it just sets them apart. I mean, and don't get me wrong, they weren't, again, I think that's another thing people get pissed off with. They don't get pissed off with Death. They get pissed off with Death fans. Mm. And I know Death fans can get a little bit like Metallica fans. Death fans, they think fucking Death are the only death metal band. And you get that with a lot of Metallica fans. Met fucking people that are like, oh, I'm obsessed with Metallica. Yeah, they don't listen to anyone else. Mm. So I do understand that, because when you think of... When this came out in 1993, yeah, you had, you know, Morbid Angel did Covenant. Carcass did Heartwork, which is sort of like a melodic, which set the tone really for sort of melodic death metal, you know, and kind of underrated albums like Brutality's first album. And James Murphy had formed his own band at this point, and he did that Dreams of the Carrion Kind, which we are going to review one day.
Nice.
And
have you heard Carcasses, new stuff, yeah?
No.
They put a song out the other day. I'd be interested to hear that.
I'm going to try and listen to that today, actually. But Dreams of a Carrying Kind, I played in the car once on the way to the radio show. And you actually went, what the fuck is this? Mm. Like, you were like, this is fucking awesome. So
we'll do it then.
It has been on the list for a while. So, yeah, before I forget what I'm saying.
Go on.
They weren't the only people that were started experimenting at this point. Whether they were the first, who knows? I mean, obviously, as well, Pestilence. People that discovered Pestilence are quite quick to point out. Death always getting fucking credit. But if you look, Pestilence always were kind of one step ahead, but Death got all the credit for it. Whether one ripped the other off, I don't know. But Spheres came out this year, and that was fucking out there, that album. And but still, no one fucking nailed it the way they did, though. That's the thing. No one resonated with people the way Death did. The reason there's people that listen to Death don't listen to anyone else, because that's what makes great music. The reason Metallica are as big as they are is because they appeal to people that don't necessarily listen to where they came from originally. You don't. And I think that Death looked outside the box, but they also reached outside the box. Death are one of the few bands that you could play to someone who wouldn't in a million years listen to fucking Cannibal Corpse or insert name here. But you could probably get away with a Death song and they'll go, right, I at least see the appeal now. I get this now, you know?
I think this album's perfect for that because it's in bite-sized chunks, like we said. It can be over-elaborate at times, riff-wise, but that's just Death in general. But it's not fucking 9 minutes of over-elaborate stuff, so you can take it in chunks and process it better. So this is definitely, I would say, the first album, if you've never heard them, that you should fucking really go for it.
Mentally Blind's a fantastic song. Yeah.
Yeah. Love the opening riff on Individual Thought Patterns. There's so much going on. There's less natural throw to the drumming, but the bass owns this album.
I'm glad you said that, yeah.
Which I'm all for. Love the solo and the riff, and that snare sounds horrible. Stop it. Change it. Don't know what you've done. It just sounds like... the change up at 2:23 is great. This is my favourite track so far, and it's the title track. There's no long epic songs, and it's definitely a WYSIWYG album. And WYSIWYG is like a geek term for what you see is what you get. And it's great. A great track, favourite track on the album so far, and I fucking love the bass.
Yeah, this is actually... We've had a bit of... we've had a lot of breaks in the last... with a death metal album, it's normally quite relentless and every so often you get a little break. So you get a little melodic bit or a little pause, quite a little bit. This one's actually quite balls to the wall, but there's a lot of... Rather than just chucking in a solo or a quiet bit, this one's got a lot of time changes. So it's a bit all over the place. And you've got to kind of... You got to pay attention with this song.
Yeah, there's so much on it.
Yeah, and I love that little bit at the minute. It just goes off into this little jam in the fucking middle of the song.
Because they can.
Yeah.
And they did. But no, I enjoyed it.
This one's very riffy, very meaty. And one thing as well, if you are... If you're indulging in some exotic tobacco...
Ooh.
Listening to a Death album... Again, I think with these spacey solos, read the lyrics as well.
Mm.
The guy was a fucking hippie.
Yeah.
He's well abandoned the zombie ritual and the, you know, being ripped apart by zombies. That shit was, he left that miles away, you know, and,
He probably forgot it if he was a potter.
Dramatically changed in the lyric-wise on the Human album. That album marked so many changes in the Death catalogue. But it carries on as well. Look at the song titles. You know, Overactive Imagination, Human Form, Jealousy, Traps in a Corner, Mentally Blind, Individual Thought Patterns, the next song, Destiny. It's all the human, you know, condition, human nature, human behavior. You know, it was very, it became very sort of philosophical and observant, really.
That tends to go hand in hand with smoking weed, to be fair. Having smoked weed and listened to this album a few times, it's music that does invoke thought anyway, and lyrically it does, and you can actually understand them actually singing, which is always a bonus. Because a lot of death metal, I find, is a bit of a turn-off. What the fuck are you... What? You sound like an angry fucking pug. Do you know what I mean? I can't be bothered with that kind of stuff, and this is good stuff. Any more individual thoughts for patterns?
I'm pretty much covered, too.
Destiny, slow riff. It sounds like a Turkish delight. Advert music, fries, Turkish delight. Full of Eastern promise. Go and Google it if you don't know what I'm on about. I like the heavy riff. The slow riff is great, and then it just goes all bungle. It just goes Mr. Bungles up to fuck. I'm all in for that. Long, big, swaying solo, like you're on the edge of the precipice to hell, and you're standing over it, and the flames are licking around your boots whilst you're fucking playing it. The little bass fills on this album are so fucking good, and this track is definitely the palate cleanser, and it's the like you were saying, it's the bit that transitions to the next stage of the album, and it's a nice little change, and it's a welcome track, and it's not a bad track, Destiny.
Oh yeah, fantastic song. I love the little acoustic intro. The way it just explodes into life, goes all heavy and kind of, this isn't like a song. It's quite sort of not groovy. It's not groovy. Kind of doomy in a little way. But then,
yeah.
And then goes into that fucking, again, melody. There's loads of it on this album. It's just fucking constantly climbing, constantly winding up to something and building to a fucking fantastic climax at the end. And it's just so much going on this album, but just so in any other bands, this would be a double album, I swear. It would easily be 10 minutes longer, but everything on this, they just do what they got to do and get out and finish. And there's just no build up on this album. I just said build up earlier, sorry. But the song's just, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
There's no fucking stupid intros.
No.
There's none of that. It's all
wanks over fucking Opeth for with their fucking hour and 20 minute long album.
We'll never listen to them.
They already did it, distilled in 1993. It's fucking crazy. Mm.
Any more for Destiny?
It's fucking amazing. That's it.
Out of Touch. Doomy intro. Sabbath-esque typo negative shit going on.
Yeah, bit of keyboard in there as well.
definitely typo. When it kicks in, I'm grinning like a stupid cunt. The galloping riff is great, and it's definitely a step up from the last track for me. He's very venomous and on point with his lyrics, and you can understand what he's saying here. And if it's just a unique style of singing that fits the whole package. And then you've got an old school computer load up solo going on, and it's just fucking and like what popped into me head when I'm listening to that is that them adverts you get on the telly saying your £3 a month can help fucking this poor child, your £3 a month can help these poor abused fretboards that these guitarists have. They're obviously worn away. There's been some kind of burning near the top of the fucking fretboard. So your £3 a month can help these poor guitars. They need the help because they're being abused. Fucking top track.
I do think Steve DiGiorio played a fretless bass on this album as well.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Do you remember, you've just jogged my memory, there was a really good death metal album that came out a few years ago by a band called Corpse Garden. And I really liked that album. And we actually interviewed the guy. And I said, the bass player is clearly, like, he's inspired, but it's pulling off Steve DiGiorio.
Mm.
And, like, even because he had a little, you know, going on.
Fuck all wrong with that.
And then it was like, and then the bass just went, bum, 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 bum. And I went like, it's very Steve DiGiulio-esque, you know. And he kind of went like, yeah, if he was here now, he'd be offended by that. Right? I went, like, I'm paying the guy a fucking compliment.
Obviously, the person who... I don't remember.
I don't think English was his first language, actually. I think I've done it. Maybe he thought I said he was ripping him off rather than inspired by him or...
Go and look in the archives find
I had to say, no, please. Like, that wasn't... I didn't mean it like that. I meant, like...
Calm your tits.
Good, yeah.
Calm your tits. To be anywhere near fucking Steve DiGiulio on this album, you fucking calm your tits,
yeah,
son.
Even if you are ripping him off, the fact that you're...
Yeah. Pulling it off into some fucking scale. If you could be fucking 1/10 of this fucking bass player, you've got an extra inch on your cock, son.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I'll put Steve Jewett up there with Cliff Burton.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I don't care who I'll piss off. Again, it's a compliment. Yeah,
I'd go with that. And whoever that guy was, go back and listen to. In fact, don't go back and listen to that cunt. Fuck him. Keep listening to us.
Yeah.
I am this. Track out of touch. Anything more for you to say with that one?
Not that I haven't already said. This has been a very it is a varied album. It's a diverse album, but it's all kept within a sort of consistent formula. It's consistently diverse, it's all still within the sort of formula that Death have forged out for themselves, with loads of little bits going on. So they kind of step out the box just to sort of grab something that they can then pull in and absorb into the sound. So, and everything, it's only 10 tracks, but slow, doomy intro that's kind of Sabbath-y and Typo Negative-y. I get what you mean there. I didn't think of that myself, I see what you mean when you said that. But again, it builds up into something more. It's atmospheric. It's fucking... Yeah, it's fucking awesome. And I don't know if this would have been a better closer, actually.
I could see that, maybe. It does take us on to the closer, The Philosopher.
Yeah.
Last track, you just got to go big. Love the riff. It's end baddie music. It's the end baddie is here.
Yeah.
The riff at 1 minute 19 sounds Maiden-like, and they managed to blend everything from... prog rock to thrash metal to death metal, out and out death, to fucking cock rock to Mr. Bungle. And yeah, anytime you can hear a fucking slidey bass line, I'm in. It's not just death metal, though. This is a vast cavern of all forms of music blended together. It's like fucking... if you're a coffee knobhead and you get a special blend of coffee and it just blows your tits off. Great. It's a nice little solo for the bass and the guitar on this track. And The Philosopher's just a great way to finish the album for me. I see what you mean with Out of Touch. Could have done it better. But this just has them like, well, we're going now, so we'll leave you something to listen to. And I enjoyed The Philosopher. And it's been good for me.
Yeah, The Philosopher is just a fucking classically written... metal song. It's one of the hits as well. It's funny because when I said it's like they closed with a single. This is the one they made the video for. They actually got a bit of traction on MTV. Beavis and Butthead covered it. Did you watch that, by the way?
I haven't watched it.
Right, well,
I'm not gonna lie.
You've got Beavis doing a Chuck Schuldiner impression.
I was gonna look at it, but then I was in the shower washing my bollocks.
Yeah, it's like he's ordering tacos in Chuck's voice. And it's like, that's pretty good, Beavis. You suck almost as much as this guy.
Nice.
But, the thing is, as far as heavy metal bands go, the fact that you was getting the shit ripped out of you by Beavis and Butthead, that was like...
there's worse things that could happen.
You've made it at that point.
I know. It probably fucking sold albums for them at the time, so I'm sure they wouldn't be asking. Yeah. If Chuck's a pothead, which we all know he was, he would have been fucking laughing his head off at that.
Yeah,
to be completely honest, I'd be.
I mean, this is actually a regular set opener as well. I've got a DVD and a live album from the tour of the last album, Sound of Perseverance. And they were opening with The Philosopher on it tour, you know. And,
nice.
The second time I saw Death to All, that's where they opened The Philosopher. And yeah, it's one of the hits, and it's funny that they finished with the single, you know, and which makes me wonder: would it have been better in the middle of the album and close without, or finish with the big one? You know, you finish a concert with a hit, so fuck it, finish the album, but. Either way, fantastic song. I think with Gene as well, I've always said when it comes to drums, and it's kind of what makes great with Dave Lombardo, especially like Angel of Death and that, or even with Neil Peart, with Rush, a great drummer, you air guitar. When you air drum, and I air drum to this fucking song. I know this power, but down, 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 ding, ding, ding. And even when I watched, when I did that tour with the ex-musicians, Gene Hoglan did the second tour, and I remember just when they opened with this song, I was just watching Gene like hitting the cymbals in time with it, you know. During the chorus, then the philosopher. On the fucking cymbals, it backs everything up perfectly, but perfectly supports the song on this. And instantly catchy riffs, great chorus, everyone is on fine form. Fuck it, yeah. Well, great way to close an album. I've just convinced myself.
Yeah, see I willed it to happen, and there it happened. Yeah. That's the power of weed and fucking. Mind control on the podcast. Let's do the ratings. I give this album a 9. It was when I originally typed it, I put 8, and I changed my mind when I was reviewing it. How mad is that? The last album was a 10 for me. This album is a 9, and the reason is the drummer. I'm sorry, Gene. You're a great fucking drummer, man. My word, if I could drum half as fucking good as you, I'd be set for life. But the flair isn't there, and that was absent, and it was missing, and the snare sounds dead annoying. So other than that, classic fucking album. Long may it continue. Really enjoying reviewing Death albums, and this is something different, and short, easy to manage packages as the tracks progress. So there's a lot for the person who's never heard them to hear, and this, I would say, is the most easily approachable of the albums to listen to so far. So if you're listening to us thinking, what the fuck, shall I go and listen to this? If you've never heard them before, this is the one you should do it with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been good to be able to concentrate on this album this week, because this is one of the albums that I listen to it the least. And I don't think this album really gets enough love, because it's basically sandwiched between two classics. Many of bands with a lengthy back catalogue get an album like this. You know, everyone kind of mulls over the shit album, and is it really that bad? And you know, but there's always that little gem that just it follows a classic. And I think if you look at Divine Intervention, for example, that album just gets so much. People overlook it because it follows Seasons of the Abyss, you know. And everyone knows as well, there's no spoilers. Anyone that listens to the show knows that Symbolic is one of my all-time favourite. Well, it's in my top three albums of all time, regardless of genre. And Human is one of my favourite albums. So between two 10 out of 10 albums, you've got like a 9 out of 10 in the middle. And because it's that, because of that one point, it might as well be a fucking 2 out of 10, because it just fucking drops out the thing, because these two albums tower either side of it. And
yeah,
and it's not fair, because most bands at their peak don't get to do an album as good as this one. And one thing I've realised is there's a lot of songs on here that Philosopher and Trapped in a Corner and... what was the other one with that really nice solo at the end? I forget what it's called now. I'm having a brain fart. Nothing is Everything, or Everything is Nothing. Yeah. You know, some of my favourite songs on this fucking album. And again, it's kind of like the commercial album. I've never really thought of it like that until this week. It's kind of like the Death's Black album in a way, because it's and again, it goes to show you can be technical and progressive and fucking fancy and weird, but can still be accessible and memorable. It doesn't have to be intimidating and quite frankly fucking boring, like so many bands do when they try and do that. And this is one of their most progressive twizzly and whirly albums, and it's one of the most fucking easy to digest. And again, there's not an ounce of fat on it. It's fucking brilliant. Everything is just, again, it's like, I think I said this about last time, but more so this time, it's like a fucking Swiss watch. Every cog is in place and it all performs its function. And one little note out of place and it all falls apart. And again, it marks another new era, because Gene Hoglan, I think he's the only drummer that fucking did more than one album with him. I think the guy did Leprosy and Spiritual Healing. What was that guy's name? Bill?
Betty.
And a brain fart. He went on to do Massacre. Oh, bollocks. You know who I mean. But yeah, apart from him and Gene, we're the only people that do more than one album, you know. Richard Christie did Control the Night, so he did more than one album with Chuck, but yeah, he only did one Death album. But yeah, no, loving this series.
What are you giving
fantastic.
It?
Oh, 9 out of 10, yeah.
Yeah, 2 9s. Great. I'm enjoying it, and we'll see where it goes and see if there's going to be a... if it's going to go higher or if it's going to go low with the next one. It's something to look forward to in the new year. Other things to look forward to coming up to Christmas is we're going to do a special. We're going to try and probably do our normal 10. And I've got a couple of interviews boxed already. We're going to get a few more people on and get them to give us their top whatever of the year. Best albums. There's no fit and finish to it. It'll just be a quick few minutes from each person we get on talking about their shit from the year. So we're still doing that. I don't know what album we're going to do next, whether it will just go straight into the Christmas bit and give us a break over Christmas. I think that's probably what will happen.
I think the next episode we'll do our top 10. That'll be a big chunky episode anyway. Then we'll have a little break and then come hit the ground running in
with something fucking big, dirty and heavy as fuck. Joe, have you got anything to plug away?
No, not at the moment. Just as usual, check out Metal Legion magazine. Check out the site, check out the Facebook page. If you're in the UK, message me and I'll send you one for $4.99. If not, go on the site, order a copy, get yourself a bulk deal, because they're doing bulk issues or an issue with a CD. Or if you're in America, check out hellsheadbangers.com and you can get it on there as well.
Awesome. At Rock Show Online on Twitter, The Rock Show Online on Facebook. Also look for The Metal Show. We've got two different pages for some reason. I don't fucking know why. If you see something on the Twitter and it looks like a console, that's me selling stuff. So buy it, you cunts. It's Christmas, for fuck's sake. Apart from that, this has been cool. Thanks very much for listening. See you later.